Today is August 31st, 2016, and this is episode number 375 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm also Bob, your uncle. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit MacObserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, write us at ACM@MacObserver.com or hit us up on Twitter at Context Machine.
Yeah, you can totally do that. And I think it's okay for everyone to start referring to you as Uncle Brian or Uncle Bob, whatever.
Yeah.
I actually have an Uncle Bob.
Does anyone ever say Bob's your uncle to him?
Probably. But I'm not around him often enough to hear the witty British banter. That's actually Cockney, isn't it? Cockney rhyme slang?
Yes. Yes, it is. Where are we doing? What are we?
This week in etymology.
This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous even for us.
Have you listened to some of our holiday specials?
That's a very, very good point. Now, I didn't actually write down the topics we decided on. And as you may remember, while we were doing the pre-show prep, I didn't remember what we were talking about as we were talking about.
You know, it's a good thing I wrote down a little note here.
Fantastic. So I usually am the keeper of the topics. You will be the keeper of the topics today.
Right. Well, the first topic we have, according to my notes, is Google RS.
Google RS.
Which means ride sharing.
Right. Interesting development. Now, I think I wrote about this yesterday.
Oh, Brian, this is one of the many reasons why I love you. You write a piece. First, you're not sure if you wrote it. Then you're not sure when you wrote it. Then you're not sure if we actually just mentioned it.
Well, and I have no idea what the contents are. So, you know, and actually, so okay, I just pulled it up and I'm scanning. And I remember this now.
Oh, this is really exciting.
Yeah, and I don't do drugs or drink. That's the I mean, you know, what's going on here? All right, so listen, Google is going to be, this is according to the Wall Street Journal, is going to be doing a ride-sharing service through its Waze app in San Francisco.
Interesting that they didn't just make a new app for this, because that just seems like the Google way. But, okay, whatever. You know, the fact that they are doing this, that in and of itself isn't news. The fact that they've launched it or are launching it, and it's in San Francisco, that's interesting. That means they're moving forward.
Yeah, they've been doing that. There are some interesting aspects of this.
Not the least of which is the fact that you had completely forgotten about the topic.
No, that's not interesting. Yeah, let's just go with that. So Google had been testing this out for like Google employees and Waze users.
Mm-hmm.
And so just in the, you know, in the Bay Area. And so the news is, as you said, it's not news that they're interested in this business. The news is that they're going forward with it, and it's still small, very small. It's only going to be in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still not the interesting part. I was careful with it. I tried to be careful with this, but David Drummond is an Alphabet executive, top Alphabet executive. Now, Alphabet, of course, is the parent company that owns Google.
Basically. I'm going to totally derail you for a second.
Sure.
David Drummond?
Yep.
Totally sounds like a Marvel Comics character name, because they're so into alliteration.
That's true.
Anyhow, back to the topic, which, by the way, was Google and ride sharing.
Excellent. Thank you. I needed that reminder. Mr. Drummond, so if you remember, Google reorganized itself into Alphabet. So the company that we used to think of as Google is now called Alphabet. And within Alphabet is a subsidiary called Google that does the search business
and a couple other things.
Yeah,
but
does the Google division own Android still?
I think so.
I think so too, but I honestly can't remember. But and there's the X Labs or the thing that used to be the X Labs, and then there's and who knows what else.
And the Nest thing, and there's Nest and a couple other things. Yeah.
So David Drummond served on Uber's board.
Right.
And now, in the meanwhile, Google, one reason why Google had someone on Uber's board was because Google made a $238 million investment in Uber some time ago. It's one of the various rounds of fundraising that Uber did. And Mr. Drummond stepped down from Uber on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Tuesday, Google announces that it's going to be doing this ride sharing thing, starting it for Realsio in San Francisco.
Whoa, that's crazy coincidence.
Yeah, what a crazy coincidence. And I am sure that Google worked out all of those plans in the hours between Mr. Drummond stepping down and the Google announcing this.
Of course. And there was no way Mr. Drummond had any inkling of Google's plans. So of course this had to be nothing more than coincidence.
Well, okay. So you know what it reminds me of?
Brian, what does this remind you of?
appearing in the role of straight man, Jeff Gamet.
Thank you.
Do you remember how Eric Schmidt stuck around on Apple's board until 2009? Do you remember? You wrote up a story where Eric Schmidt said, no, I'm totally fine on Apple's board. And this was in 2009, July of 2009. And 2 years after iPhone was released, and of course Android had been released since. And you know, we know that Mr. Schmidt, who was CEO of Google at the time, recused himself from Apple board discussions concerning iPhone.
Right.
And we know that, and I have no doubt that that's true. But then there's no accusation to hang on Mr. Schmidt, to be completely fair. There's no accusation to specifically hang on Mr. Schmidt, but it's pretty darn screwy that Android ended up very specifically looking a lot like iOS, and that this happened while Mr. Schmidt was on the Google board, the Apple board.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have it is very possible that Mr. Drummond was in no way involved in Google's plans to do a ride sharing service.
Right.
That's entirely possible. It's actually, I would even say it's likely, unless they have lost their minds.
Right. Yeah. Yes. It seems to me like the whole ride sharing thing is something he may have had knowledge of, because it's something that everyone had knowledge of, but he wasn't directly involved with.
Well,
when the announcement was going to be made, at that point, it was clear that regardless of what he did at Google, it would be seen as a conflict of interest for him to continue sitting on Uber's board. Therefore, he needed to quit.
Now it gets even a little more interesting in Google's favor. Uber has been using Google Maps for mapping services within their infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
They are developing their own mapping services.
Yes.
So Uber is also going to be is essentially working on being in competition with Google on something that is a Google stronghold.
Yes. And one of the things that Google wants to do is make their ride-sharing service an autonomous vehicle service.
Yeah, but and that's what Uber wants to do. And, of course, we know that Google wants to do autonomous vehicles. But we're getting actually, you're jumping ahead, though.
Oh, sorry.
You're totally jumping ahead because to me, a pattern is showing itself within Google, where Google is on boards with companies that it's going to be competing with and stays there as they're developing those plans. There's no specific accusation to hang on Google there. It is likely that everything was done above board, but it has a truthiness element, which is I'm dinging myself for the truthiness there. It has a truthiness element that doesn't feel right. And you know, the SEC has gotten so lackadaisical at doing anything to corporations anymore. Certainly nothing will ever come of it. But I don't know. Doesn't feel right to me.
All right. So I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment. Google, now Alphabet, is involved in such a wide range of products, services, technology areas. Is it really possible for someone from Google to serve on another company's board without having some sort of overlap?
Yeah, absolutely. Google could be on the board of a retailer, a petroleum consulting firm or a petroleum firm, financial services company. I mean, there are a jillion industries that no matter how big Google gets or how wide Google spreads, that Google could serve on the board for board within that industry without having any conflict of interest.
Sure. But what I was focusing on was in the technology sector.
Well, but I mean, there's no reason why Google executives or Google can't serve on boards outside
of course,
the technology world.
Right.
So, I mean, you know,
I agree with that completely. Okay, so I'm going to take you by the hand with this because I know you're kind of slow today, Brian. Where I'm eventually going with this, but I'll just jump to the chase. Why would any company in the technology arena today want to have someone from Google on their board?
Well, because Google is really good at what it does. And that person's probably going to be bringing a wealth of experience to that board.
Sure. But do you want to do that even knowing there's a high likelihood that whatever you're doing today is something Google's going to be doing 3 years from now?
I wouldn't know, but I'm also paranoid and don't like Google's business model in the first place, so I'm probably not the person to ask that question. I would imagine that for most people, they would risk it.
Maybe.
You know, yeah. Having a Google executive on your board is going to be a cap in your feather. Same thing with like a feather in your cap. Feather in your cap. And same thing with Apple or, you know, Facebook to in my opinion, infinitely lesser extent because LOL Facebook. You know, yeah, anyway, I think that most people would probably risk it. Clearly, because
they are
going to serve on Apple board on other boards. And yeah. I have no doubt that Mr. Schmidt brought a lot of help to Steve Jobs before things went south between those two people.
I'm sure you're right
that Eric Schmidt helped out Apple on his board, on the board, and had all kinds of insight and advice. Of course, you know, we are talking about the same guy who told Apple not to bother with maps because it was too hard.
Yeah, well, you know, he may have been saying that from the perspective of we're already doing maps. We don't want other people in this space.
Well, he said that after he left the board, too.
Yeah. And but you know, maybe it's one of those things where since he already knew what it took for Google to get there, he honestly felt that it was not a good idea for other companies to do this because it's a really difficult thing to do.
Who knows? Yeah, I kind of look. Yeah, you're kind and charitable today.
Today,
yeah. So then there's the thing that you tried to jump to. That's enough about Mr. Drummond. He did leave, and he cited a conflict of interest between the two companies, and I think that that's true for both of them. Mm-hmm. Whether or not there are any shenanigans, and again, I'm not specifically, I'm not at all, I have nothing on which to hang any kind of accusation on anybody on this. It just doesn't feel right to me, and that's so vague that, you know, it's, I want to make sure that I'm not making them out, that I'm not overstating my case here.
Sure. And I think that in this case, it is very likely that he was not directly involved in anything involving the ride sharing or autonomous vehicle programs, or at least not in a way that would be relevant to his position on Uber's board. But unless they lost their minds. Nonetheless, his presence on Uber's board after Google made its announcements would be inappropriate.
Yes, and it would have been inappropriate for Uber too, because Uber is competing, is developing its own mapping services. So, I mean, you know, for everybody concerned, it was time for him to go, and they did the right thing. Google still owns part of Uber. Mm-hmm. And Google is clearly interested, you know, clearly has enough information from somewhere that mysteriously gained to want to go into the ride-sharing business. And now we can jump ahead to another area of interest between those two companies. Uber has made it very clear it wants to get rid of all those pesky drivers.
Right. And Google has said that it wants to be using autonomous cars for its ride-sharing service.
Well, and Google is interested in doing autonomous cars vehicle. This is the thing. We got to go back to Larry Page, Google co-founder, where they made a choice. Mm-hmm. The first thing he worked on when he was young was autonomous vehicles. And then he got involved in this whole search engine project with Sergey. And the two of them did that, and they actually made a choice. So, you know, which one are we going to do? We're going to do a search engine, or we're going to do the autonomous cars? And the search engine thing seemed a lot more doable and a lot more immediate, and so they chose that. But self-driving cars is something that is very much a passion for Larry Page. He also wants to get rid of those pesky drivers, but he wants to do it for all of us.
Right. And, yeah, so he wants to get rid of them for all of us. One aspect of that will be their ride-sharing service at some point. And when they made that clear to Uber, that's when Uber's management decided they needed to jump on that. Because if Google owned the autonomous vehicle side of all of this, then Uber's business would just go away. So Uber started investing in its own autonomous vehicle technology, and they're actually out the gate before anyone else. Because they've already started testing in Pittsburgh.
Right. Now, I personally have doubts about how fast that's really going to yield cars without a driver sitting there. I mean, like right now, they've got, you know, any autonomous vehicle in this test in Pittsburgh has two engineers in the car.
Yes.
One with his hands ready to take over in a moment's notice, and the other to monitor everything else and just to make sure everything's copacetic. So, I mean, it's a massive money sink.
It's a massive money sink, but they need to make the investment now, and they need to move aggressively if they plan on being able to compete with Google in the long run. Now, part of the reason they need to have the two people in the car is because they have to work within the legal restrictions that are in the city of Pittsburgh. So how fast they can move forward with pulling drivers out of cars is going to, I think, ultimately be dependent on the laws in the various regions where they launch the services, and then
there's no regulatory framework anywhere, not even in California, which is a leader in the area.
Yeah, so there are legal and regulatory changes that have to come before you'll see these Uber cars truly just out on their own. No people in them unless they have a fare.
It's going to be years. It's going to be years.
Right. But if they don't start now, then Google will be ahead of them.
Right. And then, of course, we know that automobile manufacturers are interested in it. We know that Apple is interested in ride-sharing. Apple has a $1 billion investment in a Chinese company called Didi that we've talked about and written about a lot. Is it Ford that's doing an aggressive?
Yes, Ford is moving aggressively. Volvo has been working very hard on this as well. And actually, the first autonomous Uber cars are Volvos. And Uber plans eventually to take its system that it's designed and apply it to other vehicles as well. But for now, it's Volvo SUVs.
And there's also, don't forget the kid. The kid who, the guy who was the first guy to hack the iPhone.
Oh, not yes. No, I know who you're talking about.
It's George something. Holt.
I want to say there's Holt in his name somewhere. I can't remember, but yes, the kid. The
guy who hacked iPhone. We're using the Google now because Apple refuses to release the search engine that it's been working on for years. Self-driving. Yeah,
so this is the same kid that actually worked as an intern with Apple for a while.
Yeah, we were both right, sort of. It's George Hutz.
Ah, there we go.
We were so close. Like, together, we almost had the right answer. Yay, us.
Go us.
I think we get a participation trophy.
We absolutely do.
Yeah. So he's 26 years, he's 27 now, and he's been in his garage making a self-driving car system. I mean, you know, guy's a super stud. Anyway, there's him. There's lots of people aiming for the self-driving car market, and Apple is probably one of them.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a reasonable assumption.
Yeah. And, so, yeah, I had some sort of all-encompassing point. I don't know what it is, but I guess the bottom line is that when you have companies, I don't think highly of Uber. I really don't.
I had no idea.
They've done too many morally and ethically questionable things. It just bugs me. But you know, I'm a high maintenance princess when it comes to these things. I've got very high expectations.
But you're our high maintenance princess.
I know. Yeah, thank you. But when you've got companies like Google and Ford and Apple and Volvo and who knows who else,
don't forget Tesla.
And Tesla, of course, Tesla. When you've got all these companies working on ride sharing technology, and let's not even talk about, I think I've said on this show that the first thing that'll be okayed will probably be self-driving trucks,
and Uber is in the lead there
for 18 wheelers.
Yeah. Let me fill you in, Brian.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. So there's a company out of San Francisco called Otto. I think it's O-T-T-E-O. So Otto. Uber bought them just recently. And Otto is a company that has been working on autonomous vehicle technology for 18-wheelers, for cargo trucks. And they've been doing limited road testing around the Bay Area. And Uber snapped them up. So now Uber has all of this technology and this whole brain trust. And one of the things they're working on is being the company that you call when you need to get around or when you need to get stuff around. So they are ahead of everyone else right now in the big truck and cargo vehicle automation system.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And there's probably other players in that space too. Trucking is a very large industry. And the if we think that Uber wants to ditch all those pesky drivers, I can assure you that the trucking industry would like nothing more than to get rid of drivers.
Yeah.
They're a hazard. And by the way, I think very highly of truck drivers. It's a very hard job. And I'm not belittling them whatsoever, but when you look at it from the standpoint of capital, drivers are a hazard. They cause accidents. They goof up. They cause delays. And you know,
regulations put a lot of downtime on the drivers, and rightly so, because they're humans and people need rest.
Yes, and people, yeah, and they have to sleep, for goodness sake.
Sure.
So from the standpoint of capital, the trucking industry wants drivers out. And they would let, I mean, you know, this is very high on the agenda of much of the trucking industry.
Can you imagine the impact this will have on Stookies?
I don't know what a Stookie is.
They're big truck stops.
Ah. Oh, right. I always call it Stuckies. Is it Stookies? Do you know that for a fact? Because it's phonetically, it's Stuckies. I'm mostly being pedantic.
I've always heard it pronounced Stookies.
Yeah, but you say Warsh.
Yes.
Do you remember that conversation we were having before the show where I said, can you imagine how insufferable I would be if I got mad when people treated me the way I treat them?
Yes. Yes, I do, Brian.
To wit, if I'd gotten mad because you laughed at me when I said a cap in your feather, can you imagine? But like, yeah, it'd be, you know.
To be fair, I did chuckle.
I know.
I didn't bother to correct you.
I chuckled. Well, because once you laughed, it's funny. I didn't realize I said that until you laughed, and I played it back in my head. Anyway, the point is this. Listeners, do you know how to pronounce this, and do you know why? Because it's phonetically, it's Stuckies. But if it was somebody's name, and it was Mr. Stookie or Mrs. Stookie or Miss Stookie,
Or Sir Stookie, Duke of Stookie.
It could. Yeah.
Lord Stookie of the pecan roll.
Off the rails. If you know how to pronounce that chain's name and know why, please shoot us a note somewhere. ACM at MacObserver.com or at Context Machine on Twitter. I need to know now because that's how I'm built.
All right. Well, then we're just going to go all in with this. And is it pecan roll or pecan roll?
Well, but that's different, though, because that's a regional thing, right?
Too late. I've already roped our listeners in.
Well, but I mean, every region has got their own way of
listeners.
There's only one correct way to pronounce Stuckies/Stookies. It's the way that the founder of the company and the company itself refers to itself.
Listeners, I want you to tell Brian how to say pecan or pecan.
Pecan.
Or pecan.
Pecan.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
There's at least three pronunciations.
Tell Brian how he's supposed to pronounce it.
Oh, I wish the show was live so I could actually be watching my inbox right now.
Yeah.
Boy, what a mess that would be. All right.
So boy, howdy.
Let's move on to the autonomous vehicles are coming. Ride sharing is coming. And by the way, we got off on an AV conversation there. This was theoretically about ride sharing. Ride sharing is also coming. Ride sharing. Listen, in a few years, many of us will not own cars. You won't need to. You just won't need to. Many of us. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but many of us.
Yeah, I agree. I know people today that have already reached a point where they don't need a car, and I'm seeing that number slowly increase. I think that over the next few years, that the number of people that don't need a car is going to increase dramatically.
Yeah, and it's going to be more than just people who don't drive very much. I mean,
it is there is going to come a point where it is cheaper for you to call Uber, Google, Apple, Didi, whatever, Lyft. Mm-hmm. Right? It's going to be cheaper for you to call for every ride that you need than it would be for you to own your own car.
That's exactly one of the things Uber is shooting for. And they, yeah, they have said that like very clearly. So, yeah, this is something that the rideshare companies are aggressively pushing towards.
And then once they get once we have enough autonomous vehicle technology at play, they will be working. All of these companies will be working on positioning cars where they're needed ahead of time.
Right. Well, they'll know because they'll have all the data telling them where people need rides and when.
Yeah.
And then you just have the cars go into those areas.
Yep.
And they can be running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, essentially, of course, cars need to have downtime for recharging and stuff. But the point is, they will be essentially always available to you.
Can I go on an accidental intelligence tangent?
I certainly hope so.
So in my book, and I did this before Uber. You know, it's just taking me too long to get this thing published. I did this before Uber was announced, certainly, maybe not conceived, but certainly long before it was announced. But you know, nobody owns a car. There's a worldwide fleet of autonomous vehicles, mm-hmm, and it's all managed from it's all managed by AIs actually, and you wait, you know, a second or two for a you call a car and it's just there. Mm-hmm. And no one even thinks about it. And that to me is where we've been, is just a natural, it's a natural progression of technology, I think. I mean, let's go somewhere. So, you know, you say, Hey Siri, none of my devices went on. Hey Siri, get me a car. And you walk outside, there she goes. And you walk outside and the car is settling down, down from the sky for you to get into.
Does it fly in and fly out like the Jetsons? That thing?
No. Yeah. But the same concept, not same implementation. And that was a very good sound effect.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm kind of proud of my Jetson sound.
I'm coughing. Why don't you take us to the next topic?
Oh, you're ready to move on to the next topic. All right. Well, here's a great segue. Hey, we're going to do the next topic now. And the next topic, my note for that is Tim Cook reverse. Andrew. Hey, I don't want to show you up on this show. This is all you've got, man.
Oh, wow. Really? This is all I've got? Where did that come from?
I was trying to channel the inner jerk. And I feel really bad now.
Hey, listeners, why don't you let us know what you think of Jeff's comment? That's all I've got?
No, it's all right. I'm already crying.
Yeah, well, I'm crying.
Let's hug.
I don't want to hug you, dude.
I feel really
what's
bad.
What's the next topic?
The next topic is all about how we have to go into group therapy now. At least it's not couples therapy because I hear they charge more for that. Anyhow, the next topic is Tim Cook and
oh yeah, that guy.
Yeah, and
what's the topic? Oh. I don't remember. I have no idea. Oh my god, it's been such a long week.
Okay, so Brian, do you remember the other day how you wrote a piece about how Tim Cook is instrumental in changing Apple's message?
Pivot. Yes, the pivot story.
Yes,
I remember now.
Okay,
right. And I think that was. Oh, right. This is where I'm making the argument now. Now, hold on a second, though, because Adam and I talked about this last week.
Yes. Oh, that would have been while I was at 360 iDev, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And Adam sat in for you. So
he's such a trooper.
Screw that guy, right?
I bet he treated you nicer than I did today.
To be fair, everybody has treated me nicer than you have today.
Well, just so you know,
all of the people. Well, and you know more than most people about the way some people have treated me. So you think about that, sir. You think about that, and you let me know how that makes you feel.
I'm still crying.
Okay, good. Tim Cook. So, and it's we. So last week you did musician interviews on TDO. So you and I have not been able to talk about this at all.
We have not.
Right.
On a side note, because this totally ties in with your book, we're going to talk about that. Not today, but I have plans, Brian.
Oh, yeah. So you do. And I'm looking forward to it. Thank you. So Once Upon a Time, Apple.
Yes. Do-do-do-do-do-do, Apple. Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
Off the rails. Where the story starts is all these interviews that Apple has been giving. And not just interviews. Glimpses into the inner workings of Apple. Like we had the story, and Adam and I didn't talk about this one, and I didn't mention this in my piece. There was Apple talking to us about how and why it developed Maps.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought processes that went on within the executive team when the Maps rollout was a disaster.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And we don't normally get looks inside Apple like that. Not unless it's a, you know, like someone who's speaking, you know, off the record. And that hasn't happened very often either. I mean, like, you know, Scott Forstall never did a tell-all. He was the guy that was fired over Maps.
That's true. Yeah.
And they didn't bag on Scott Forstall either in the interview.
No, they did not. They took responsibility as a company for what happened, and they even said where they made the mistake, which was that they didn't have a large enough test base for the Map system, and they were caught completely off guard when it didn't work right, because it worked fine for them in Cupertino.
Yeah, which is funny, because it wasn't even perfect in Cupertino. Now, mind you, I've always liked Apple Maps, and in part because it looks so good. Mm-hmm. But there were definitely problems in navigation in the early days. But that's a derail too. Here's an interesting aspect of this. Steve Jobs wants to run everything lean.
Yes.
Wants to. I'm stepping back in time, because obviously Mr. Jobs has passed away. I didn't mean to say that he still wants to, but
spoilers.
When he was running the company, he wanted to run everything lean like a startup.
Right. Yeah. And that's a philosophy that he carried through all the way to when he resigned.
Right. And the reason why is because small teams can say no, and small teams can pivot, and small teams can make hard decisions, and small teams can just, like, you know, drop a project, or, you know, all of these things. It was a small team that developed iOS. It's a small team that developed OS X for Intel. It was a small team that did the Macintosh. It was a small team that did the iPod and iTunes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. There's a pattern here.
There's a pattern there, and it was very successful for Apple, and it was part of Jobs. You know, Jobs was ruthless about this. You know, every project was kept very lean. And then they got to Maps, which was started under one Steve Jobs, and they ran it lean, and they ran into problems. And it's like Maps was the kind of, you know, I would assume that if Steve Jobs had not passed away, that he too would have agreed to make the Maps team orders of magnitude larger if they were going to do it at all. And that was sort of the decision that they made.
Right.
It was like, do we really care about this? Because we just screwed it up. Do we screw it up because we don't care about it? Or did we screw it up because we made a mistake and we didn't invest enough in it?
And they decided they made a mistake and didn't invest enough in it. So they doubled down and have been working very hard ever since then to improve Maps. And part of that was to create the public beta program for iOS.
Yeah, that led to the public beta program for iOS, which led to public beta for OS 10 as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the map team is now, I think they said did they say over 1,000 or did they say they had thousands of people working on it? Which
I don't remember. But regardless, it's four-digit number of people working.
Four. Yeah, certainly not five. Definitely a four-digit number.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Definitely. Definitely four-digit.
Yeah. No derailing. So these were insights that we don't get, that we've never gotten before, and that happened this year. And then we get the Tim Cook. What did Tim Cook do? Tim Cook did interviews with Charlie Rose, mm-hmm. did an interview on ABC. He did an interview with Time. And then after WWDC, you had Craig Federighi and Phil Schiller did the live the talk show with John Gruber.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Phil Schiller had done the talk show the year before.
Right.
Right, but this time around it was Craig and Phil, and they talked about even more stuff. And then since then, we've had various iterations of Tim Cook, Phil Schiller, Craig Federighi, and Eddie Q doing interviews with Fast Company, The Washington Post, and The Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah,
right. And then Apple goes and presents at Black Hat for the first time in years, and then used Black Hat to announce a new bug bounty program for security researchers, yeah, right?
This is so not Steve Jobs Apple.
No, and all of this open. This isn't just a story about openness. This isn't just Tim Cook relaxing the rules on Apple being less closed and more transparent. This is not that. That's not what's going on here. I think that Apple, I think it's Tim Cook particularly and specifically, made a decision that Apple itself should become more involved in shaping the Apple narrative that is always being shaped by outside forces, i.e. journalists and pundits and, you know, whomever.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it seems like for a long time, Apple wasn't concerned about what the message was because they were on task with whatever it is that they're going to do. I think they care now because they are in a position where even because they are, despite the fact that they are as big as they are, the media can have a bigger impact on how the public perceives the company simply because they're much more visible now.
If you go back to the era of Steve Jobs and Katie Cotton.
Mm-hmm. That's when we had the black hole that was their PR department.
Right. Where the PR department's job was...
was to not talk to us.
Most PR departments, and I've made this point numerous times, and it's becoming increasingly less relevant. Most PR departments, their job is to get the press to say something, anything about their company. And Apple's PR department, alone on the planet, under Katie Cotton in particular, who is now departed. She left Apple several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Their job was to control what was said about Apple.
Right.
Alone of... Certainly amongst all large corporations, but probably amongst everybody. I mean, it was really interesting. And one of the ways they did that was by carefully controlling access to executives, by not allowing employees to speak to the press, by not allowing almost all executives to speak to the press. Basically, if you were press and you wanted a story about Apple, you got that story by interviewing Steve Jobs, and only if your magazine promised a cover shot that involves Steve Jobs in some Apple product.
And even then, good luck getting the interview.
It was very rare. It was all about control, and it worked really well for Apple under Steve and Katie. But in this, I didn't I didn't go too far into this in my written piece, but that sort of strategy is utterly dependent upon the people envisioning it.
Mm-hmm.
The strategy that works for Steve Jobs and Katie Cotton is not the strategy that would work for Tim Cook and Katie Cotton, because they're different people.
No, it feels like the Steve and Katie system was more about controlling the system.
Yeah, it was about control.
And sure. And under Tim Cook, it's more about cooperation.
Well, yeah, to a certain extent. But now, I mean, because for the first several years of Tim Cook's operations, while Apple PR became more open, it wasn't like Apple PR was open. Relatively more open, but that's far cry from being open. So Apple started doing things like issuing statements regarding customer complaints. That's unheard of. It was unheard of. Acknowledging a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, saying that we're going to work on it, acknowledging some kind of external criticism. Apple would sometimes acknowledge. I mean, so, you know, we were seeing little bits and pieces like that. But then this thing that's been happening, this started after WWDC 2015 with Phil Schiller on the talk show, started there, but has really accelerated. We see Apple giving information to journalists that, quite frankly, is shaping the narrative about Apple.
Sure. Yeah, they are cooperating with the media to control the message as opposed to simply trying to control it.
Correct. And I think that part of that is because we're in this big transition. Apple is in the process of a major transformation. Apple is becoming a different company, a company that is infinitely bigger than the Apple of old, not just in terms of headcount, not just in terms of product. I mean, Apple is still always going to have a focused product line compared to other companies of its size,
mm-hmm.
but Apple is getting into more and more industries. The healthcare industry, we know that Apple is targeting.
Mm-hmm.
They have a 4-digit team working on AR and or VR, augmented reality and or virtual reality.
Mm-hmm.
We have a 4-digit team working on the Apple Car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bob Mansfield now anyway, we have all of these different fields, and this is just the stuff that's leaked.
Right.
And I believe that in 10 years, maybe 20, but as early as 10 years, the products that we think of as being Apple today will not be the products that we think of being Apple tomorrow, even if they're still being made.
This is not an unprecedented move for Apple, because we've already seen this. They were a computer company.
Right.
And then they did this transition into being I'm going to call it the mobile device entertainment company. And so that transition began, although we didn't realize it at the time, with the iPod. But when we really were aware of it, we had the iPhone. And yeah, I think you're right. We are witnessing another major transition for Apple, and it's going to be really interesting to see what that company is.
Yes. And because Apple is engaging in this massive transformation, we're seeing things like longer product cycles with the Macintosh, which annoys the crap out of me, and I believe you.
It does. But at the same time, if Apple was releasing a new Mac, say, every 9 months, or a new MacBook Pro every 9 months, I don't think we'd be seeing changes that were significant enough that people would feel like it was worth Apple doing that. It's a hard place for Apple to be. They're damned for these long release cycles, and they're damned if they have a short release cycle.
Yeah, whatever.
Still,
short release cycles.
I really wish that we would have had new, significantly different MacBook Pros already. Because, I mean, if you look at it, a 2011, 2012 MacBook Pro doesn't perform that much differently than a 2015 MacBook Pro.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the point is that Apple right now can't rely on products shaping the narrative.
So they need people to do it.
And this thing that people have been doing is giving, like, the story on AI and Siri,
mm-hmm.
and machine learning and neural nets. That was an unprecedented look at what Apple is doing. And these are things that might never have come to light because they're all things that form, like, the background foundation of product development. Right, that they're not even Siri. I mean, Siri is. We don't see the things that make Siri Siri.
True,
and Apple gave us this look at how it's putting neural nets together and why it's putting neural nets together and how it's using this machine learning and how and they talked a little bit about how machine learning is shaping the way all these different products are being developed. And then they actually gave Stephen Levy a printed portfolio of all the products where AI and machine learning are being put to use.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, this never happened. And why is Apple doing this? Because Apple right now is seeing stories about how Amazon, of all companies, is leapfrogging Apple because Echo can listen by rote and respond by rote.
Right. And regardless of how sophisticated that technology is compared to whatever Apple's doing, it doesn't matter. The fact is that people see this in action and they see it functioning reliably, and that's
what's Apple doing. Apple's you know, behind. There were stories about how Apple couldn't hire anybody in the AI field because Apple wouldn't let anybody publish, and the entire AI academic world is very focused on public publishing and sharing information and going to conferences and yakking at each other and being, you know, it's not quite open source by any stretch of the imagination. There's lots of proprietary stuff within the AI world, but the AI researchers themselves, it's an open community.
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw a story about 2 years ago where the story hit me. I know that it helped shape the narrative that I was spinning about Apple. The story said that Apple was finding it difficult to hire top researchers because they didn't like Apple's closed approach to everything, where they couldn't talk about anything. So one of the things that Apple tells us through these interviews is that what they're doing is they're looking for researchers who get the closed concept. And they're saying that they're finding those researchers and that there are lots of people who are less interested in the public aspect of their research and more interested in the idea of making things that actually work for people. Okay, now, this was a story that was not being told. This was not part of the Apple narrative.
Right.
And Tim Cook decided that had to change. And the only way to change it is to actually tell journalists some stuff.
And that's kind of funny when you think about it, because the notion that Apple would actually say, here's what we're doing, is so crazy compared to what we used to see.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember, was it 60 Minutes that got to do the interview inside Johnny Ive's lab?
Right.
Can you imagine if Tim Cook was running Apple? That would never happen.
You mean Steve Jobs?
I mean Steve Jobs. Brian, your tiredness, it's rubbing off on me.
That's okay. It's a cap in your feather.
That's sweet, because I need another cap in my feather on the only show that I have.
Yeah. So, it's interesting to me. And this is just part of Apple's continued evolution. You know how Apple does iterative changes to products? Mm-hmm. Right? So that's the thing. That's the big thing that Steve Jobs learned at Next. Right. And this, by the way, was something that I learned from Becoming Steve Jobs by Tetzley and Schlunder.
Mm-hmm.
Brent Schlunder and Rick Tetzley. Hey, I did it. Yay. I think it's the first time.
Go
I
remember you. Their names.
Yeah, it's the first time. Seriously, it's the first time I remember their names without having to look it up. Anyway, one of the big things he learned at Next is that iterative improvements count. And iterative improvements are important. So fine, you do the big new product that is disruptive, and then you iteratively change it. Well, we saw that when Steve Jobs came back to Apple. We saw it with first the Macs, and then iPods, and then iTunes, and then iPhones and iPads, and everything else that Apple's doing. You know, they focused on the a big new product and then iteratively improving it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing is true for Apple. We're seeing iterative improvements and changes, iterative changes. Some people might not call them improvements, but iterative changes at Apple as the company continues to grow. And that is remarkable, especially when you look at the fact that the people that are shepherding all these iterative improvements in the corporation are the same people that were there when the company was a beleaguered PC maker.
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting. And it's just really interesting. And as someone that was writing about Apple through the black hole phase, when we couldn't get information out of the company, and then seeing what we have now, man, this is like we're talking about a completely different company.
Yeah, in some ways, that's true.
Yeah. So we've been so focused on these topics. We're like out of time. Seriously, we have like 2 minutes left.
Yeah, we only did. What was our third topic?
Our third topic was
I honestly have no idea.
We were going to talk about WhatsApp and their privacy policy change.
Oh, sure. Screw Facebook.
There you go.
There we go. That's our third topic.
There you go.
Share information with Facebook or something that Facebook owns and get what you deserve. Same thing with Google.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, but we have an article on Mac Observer telling you how to opt out of the data sharing.
That's handy. We should put that in the show notes.
We should totally put that in the show notes.
Yeah, we should do that. I guess I'm the one who's going to be doing the show notes today. I guess
you should totally do that.
That's assuming I remember. Oh, blessed sleep, where art thou?
As somewhere else. Certainly yeah. Not here.
Yes.
All right. Well, then I know exactly what to do to make it easier for you to get to bed sooner. I have to push this button right here. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thank you for listening.
Okay, you lied. That sound will not help me get to sleep. At all, in any way, shape, or form. You will, dude, you are so mean to me today.
I was really just trying to help that time.
Our content, including the content written by that meanie, is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
And it's okay, people. Brian and I, we still love each other, and I'm going to keep telling myself that and stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer, assuming I can survive Jeff's Tinder ministrations. So ridiculous.
Oh, man.